What's up, everyone? Welcome back for part two of My Worst Mistakes at Bedside. Not mine personally. We had you guys submit stories.
And there were so many that we split it into two.
Yes. So sit back and enjoy as we get right into it. Next story. Had a lot of staff turnover on the unit I used to work on. Constantly cranking out new grads on the floor with little orientation. This was a med-surg floor, but we took cardiac drips all the time. It was honestly a poorly managed PCU. Anyway, I had a rapid call on a patient that was there for 6 weeks of antibiotics and had a pick placed that afternoon. The nurse was a new grad and the patient was in hypertensive crisis. MD asked what meds the patient had been given and she said I gave 5 mls of lidocaine. Apparently, it popped up on the MR after the pick nurse left because she didn't scan the lidocaine to place the pick. So the new grad thought she was supposed to give the 5 mls of lidocaine through the pick after its placement. Definitely didn't ask any questions when she was unsure. Thankfully, the patient ended up being fine, but after he requested a new nurse.
I would definitely question something if I wasn't sure. And maybe it's just all about personality. Not necessarily personality, but just having a voice and being confident enough to ask questions.
Yeah.
And I think that that would minimize the amount of mistakes that you could make as a nurse if you just ask questions.
Well, also, you know, the nurse might not have even had questions, like something popping up on your MR that says it's supposed to be given and you don't realize it was just for like a procedure or something. If you're not that like solid on your like meds and you're not double checking stuff.
It's understandable for a new grad to make that mistake.
Yeah.
But you don't do lidocaine.
Like, yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, we know that. But I'm saying a new grad who's, like, not sure and you're just going through scanning your meds, giving, like, I don't know. That's one of those things that,
we're
like...
We're thinking it's a new order because it's, like, a new pick line. So you're like, oh, maybe that's what you do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would still ask.
I think, like, I really believe, like, if a new grad should have good stress, like, use stress, right? I think they teach that in nursing fundamentals, like, always have use stress. Does anyone remember that? Anyway, I did in my school. But anyway, I always tell my preceptees, I was like, hey, don't be so laissez-faire. Just like always have like this, like you should be doing something. Just double check if anything. That's what I always tell my preceptees.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think I'm just kind of partial in new grad. So I'm trying to like bend over backwards to excuse the lidocaine thing. But sometimes when things pop up on the MR, it's just.
You're eager to get things done and like, do the new things.
Yeah. All right. Next story. Hi everyone, I'm still not sure to this day if I made an error in the story or not. Everyone I've spoken to about it says I did nothing wrong. But with the way it all happened, I have always felt that there's something I had to have done wrong. I'm still a new nurse, almost a year into my career, and this happened when I was working in the adult ICU. I work in the ER now. Maybe a month or two out of orientation, my unit was split into two sides, 8 beds apiece, and then one weird little area with 4 beds added that we called the hole. It was very isolated from the rest of the unit and tucked away by itself, so the name was very apt. I worked 7 on, 7 off.
Which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of these crazy schedules. And I was in the hole for this 7.
I feel bad.
Yeah, that's a lot. But I mean, those off days got to be amazing.
I don't know, you're still sleeping from work.
That's true. That night, I had one patient who was intubated, but pretty stable, and one who was absolutely buck wild. She was a tiny middle-aged woman with some mental delays, a history of IVDA, and a long psych background. And from the time I got there for my shift, she was already in restraints and bouncing all over the bed still. I got report the day shift guy left, and she just got worse over the next hours. I tried everything. Decreased stimuli, tried to talk her down, nothing worked. She had nothing for agitation, ordered PRN, so I called the on-call nurse practitioner for that physician who had admitted her. He ordered 10 milligrams of Zyprexa IM. I verified everything, made sure the order was in the chart, pulled a Zyprexa from our med room, scanned it and gave it, and sat back down at my desk, which was directly in front of this patient's room. Within a minute or two, the woman went silent, from screaming and slamming her body on the bed to nothing at all. Her monitor still looked the same, but when I turned around to look at her, I saw her agonal breathing, and I felt all the blood leave my face. I jumped out of my chair and into her room, sternal rubbed the shit out of her and checked for a pulse. I yelled for the other nurse that was in the hold to come with me, also a new grad with as little experience as me, to get the charge nurse and the crash cart over. Hey, reading's hard, guys. All right, don't be fooled. I thought I maybe felt a pulse, but I wasn't sure if it was mine or hers. And the charge nurse was in the room seconds later, and another nurse pulling the code cart behind her. The charge confirmed that she had no pulse, and I started compressions. We called the code overhead. More nurses came running in, and we went to work. I had been in several codes during my orientation, but this was the first code I had been in where the patient was not already intubated and didn't have a central line. Luckily, she had two good IVs, and we were able to get her back with two rounds of epi. After the ER doc placed a central line for us, we got the patient stable and settled. I dug back through her chart. I quadruple checked that I had given the right med, the right dose, the right route, the right everything. I called the on-call practitioner again to tell him what had happened and even confirm with him again the order he gave me. As far as I could tell, I had done everything right, but I've never been so terrified of making a mistake. I felt certain that her coding had been my fault somehow. Turns out what happened was she had developed endocarditis from the IVDA and had a massive embolic shower stroke as a result. She had slipped into PEA, and had I not seen her agonal breathing, it could have been a hot minute before someone noticed there was something really wrong. The whole memory still scares me and haunts me to this day. And I think no matter how many times people tell me I did everything right, I'll still always believe I made some kind of mistake. And the whole not sure if I felt her pulse or not, get me the charge nurse, is why they shouldn't put two new grads in the hole anymore. It should be an experienced nurse and a new grad if there's any new grad back there at all. Just my two cents. And yes, I'm still terrified to give Zyprexa till this day. Also, for anyone wondering, the woman ended up being discharged home walkie-talkie, almost like nothing ever happened.
I don't think she made a mistake. She followed orders, made sure she got the right patient, right med, right everything. I'm not sure why she thinks that she made that mistake, she or he.
Yeah, I think she has to stop beating herself up for that, because she actually made the right call. She called the code. She saw the she caught the agonal breathing. That's really hard. PEA is really hard to see because the monitor doesn't go off, you know, because they think there's still electrical activity. So she caught it right on time.
It just goes to show how much guilt we can carry with us, like no matter what the outcome is. Like the patient even went home walkie-talkie because she saw her agonal breathing. So
she did a good job.
Yeah.
If you're out there listening,
this is what you wanted to hear.
You made no mistake.
you did a good job. An excellent job, because if she hadn't seen that agonal breathing, that's problems.
Like 95% of the time, I don't take my work home, but like during those situations like this is when you actually take yourself home and you start beating yourself up, like, could I do anything wrong? But no, she did the right thing.
Yeah, and once you get into that, it can be a
vicious cycle.
Yeah, you just start spiraling.
Yeah.
All right, next story. Years ago, when I was still in LPN before I got my RN, I was working at a SNF. I was called to the room by a CNA saying my patient had vomited the meds I had given. I'd helped the aide clean the patient up, did a courtesy listen to the lungs, and her lungs sounded like the patient's usual lung sounds. 2 hours later, the CNA came to me while I was busy passing meds and doing another treatment and asked me to recheck the patient because she seemed to be breathing loudly. I put it off. I was busy with other things. I have 40 patients. While I was handing off for the night, another CNA came to get me. The patient was now in respiratory distress. I came to the bedside and I could hear the junky breathing from the door. The SAT was in the 70s. The patient had aspirated either that first vomit or subsequently. The patient lived after a long ICU stay. I've never forgiven myself for it fully. I always recheck patients frequently after vomiting now. I'm in the acute setting as an RN these days. Though I want this post to be anonymous, I frequently tell the story to new nurses I'm orienting and explain that anyone can make mistakes and that it's easy to feel too busy to do the things you need to do. I try to impart with this experience that you're never too busy with tasks to put eyes, hands, and ears on a patient.
That's a dangerous place to be working at. Like SNFs, actually, like 40 patients as a critical care nurse, I really respect what nurses and SNFs do. They take care of the whole wing.
Yeah,
it's their responsibility, and it's just, I can't imagine being in her shoes doing that. And plus, they're in the front lines of the COVID also. Like, basically, that's the ground zero of every nursing home.
Yeah.
And then I feel so bad that they have to go through what they're going through.
I wonder why the ratios at SNFs are so high. Like, I get that was a mistake that was made, but she or he was so busy with 40 patients.
I can't even imagine. That's like, how do you even know who's who?
Yeah.
Like, what does that med pass look like?
Because they're not scanning, I don't think.
Yeah.
Like, I remember my a clinical rotation in nursing school that was at a SNF. Yeah. And that was, I remember being there and being like, no, like I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel bad for them because they get a bad rep. Like, oh, you work at a SNF. Like, you know, when you say they work at a SNF, you know, like you're not in an acute care hospital. Now, like when she says, I'm at an acute care hospital. Well, they're all registered nurses and they actually do so much.
Yeah.
I just have to give it up to them for like, you know, I know you did all you can. When the NA told you about that patient distress, you could have been more cognizant of the fact and see her fast, but you have 40 patients. It's just a dangerous place to work at, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't call that a mistake.
My comment about being in nursing school is more just like seeing how hard it is to work in that place. I was just like, no, this is not the route I want to go.
I've never had clinical rotations to SNF before.
Did you?
Yeah, we did. We didn't do much of like the medical stuff because it was just like, oh, we only give meds at night. And we were there during the day. So we like participated in the little events and like, you know,
played some bingo.
Played bingo, colored, talked to the dementia patients. We did a presentation on like dementia versus delirium. Like, I just remember like doing like those types of things, but nothing with the actual like, this was what your role would be if you were an RN in this position.
I remember it was our first clinical.
It was one of the first semesters.
Yeah. Okay, next story. I'm a little over a year into my nursing career, so I still consider myself a baby nurse. I've only made a few mistakes, but my most oh shit one happened just a few weeks ago. I confused a container of medication with chlorhexidine mouthwash, and I pushed the mouthwash in the patient's J-tube. The patient ended up being just fine, but I felt awful about it for a good bit of that shift.
Yikes. I mean...
have you ever swallowed soap or Listerine?
I have not.
Okay.
But chlorhexidine is something else, so it's different than Listerine.
Yeah.
I know.
Well,
okay, cut that. I didn't say that.
No, it's fine. That's...
No, but like, I mean, that's what you use it for. It's the mouthwash.
No, I mean,
I'm making myself look dumb.
But listen, though, I think this could be another system thing because, you know, some of those chlorhexidine containers, they look very similar to like those same like potassium ones or like whatever
magnesium.
Else. Like those containers with like the brown.
No, the magnesium is what I meant.
They lock. The brown with the foil container lid one.
So, I mean, to be honest, a lot of these errors do have to do with like double checking, and like there's also a pattern of like people working 6 of 6 or 7 of 6. Like, you're gonna make errors if you're working.
We're having things that look so similar.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing. So reporting is good because then there could be new policies put in place. So at my work, I can't remember the meds, but 2 vials look very similar to each other, and so what we do is we put on stickers that say, I forgot what it says. It just basically says, like, watch out, same name med, or the meds that sound alike, look alike.
I remember those, like, everywhere, like, the sound alike, look alike meds, and they have, like, the certain parts of it are capitalized and just help you differentiate.
And, I mean, also, a lot of times those meds are, like, they do crazy stuff with the way they, like, show up in the MAR just to, like, highlight, watch out.
Yeah, but remember, we don't have a MAR where I'm at.
I know.
Yeah, fuck that. I could not.
We have a med closet.
The scanning is the ultimate secret, man. Like,
yeah.
It's like, you feel so naked without it now.
Whenever they have, like, the epic downtimes, does anyone remember that?
Yeah, I'm like,
oh. Oh, man, I wait until it comes back on. I'm just like, please come back on. Yeah.
It's like a glimpse into what it used to be. We're like, no.
You feel like you like pulled an unlucky straw off, like you're working like it's epic downtime tonight. All right, next story. I was a frazzled new nurse on a busy, short-staffed cardiac step-down unit. Trying to save time, I pulled patient A's medication and patient B's medication at the same time and put the meds in 2 different piles on my wall. I wheeled into patient A's room, scanned his meds, and all is well. I give him his pills and he swallowed them, and it felt like my heart stopped because I realized I gave him patient B's medication. I didn't say anything to the patient. I stepped out of the room and confessed to my friend/mentor on the unit. He went over to each patient's chart and double checked all the allergies with me. Turns out the only significant medication was a switched blood pressure pill. Taking the somewhat sketchy advice of my mentor, I didn't call the doctor, tell the patient, or report myself. I monitored the patient's blood pressure more frequently, and the patient was fine. Obviously, I learned from that mistake, and I have never made it again.
This is the incriminating one. Oh, my God.
Wait, so I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question since I don't work at the hospital. hospital, if you're pulling out patient A and patient B and you're giving patient A patient B's meds, mm-hmm. how do you pull out the other meds to give to patient B? Like, would it be a double med? Like, no. Would you be pulling it out again from like the Pyxis? Do you guys have a Pyxis?
Yeah. So she went to the Pyxis and got everything out at once, put them in two piles, scanned the right medications, mm-hmm. but then accidentally gave the wrong medications.
It's like opened the medications from the second pile.
Yeah. So she mixed up her piles and then she...
So how is that not reportable then?
It is. It should have been.
If it's a daily med, you could pull it out again. If it's a times one med, it gets grayed out. But if it's a daily med, you could always pull it out again.
Yeah.
As long as it's not narcotic or anything, they don't count that.
Oh.
Because if you drop your med on the floor, you could always pull a new med.
Got it.
Yeah, with meds that aren't like narcotics or anything, you can just go back and pull them back out. Because, I mean, there's a certain level of that freedom that's needed, which mm-hmm. as Art just said, like if you drop a med, you don't want to have to go through a whole process just to get like, I don't know, like a stool softener
or even the blood pressure pill. Like,
yeah.
But if it's a time one med like warfarin mm-hmm. and then you actually close it and you didn't pull it out, it's such a hassle to get that medicine back. Like you have to call pharmacy.
Daily medications, it definitely opens it up for like, if you can get away with things just as she listed.
She finagled it a little bit, and I'm not going to defend her. Never mind. Never mind. It was.
If the head of my hospital is listening, I have to tell her, you got to report that because, you know, it could change the system. You know,
if for some reason there was a reaction, you want to have record of what it was from.
Yeah, because luckily nothing happened to the patient, and the patient was monitored a little bit more with the blood pressure, but something happened and they found the root of the problem. What happened? That nurse would have been in a lot more trouble than.
Oh, definitely.
You'll
yeah.
definitely get fired for something you don't report more likely yeah. than like, reporting something.
They would be upset that like you pulled both of your patients' medications at the same time, but they would be more understanding if you're willing to be like, I did this. And the only thing that she really did switch was a blood pressure medication. And they already were supposed to have a different one. So, like, that's why I can see her, like, justifying not saying anything. But it's always better to say something. So if it does come back.
Well, this is exactly what we saw with the poll results, where, like, that drop off of, like, mistakes, did you report your mistakes? And a lot of the messages I got were exactly that. Like, people were like, well, it was pretty inconsequential. So why would I say anything?
I'm just happy that I only have one patient at a time. And props to you guys. I'm not sure if I could ever work on a floor where I have like multiple patients, like 5-to-1 nurse. I only have one patient at one time.
I can never work without a scanner. So like I'd be back there like, where is it? Where is it?
And I also have paper charting. That sucks.
It's super cold in the OR too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
It's super cold. You know, I actually, in nursing school, I watched an open heart surgery.
Oh, that's
and they
cool.
put me on a stool to like stand up and look at it. I was so cold. I had like the thorough gown on. I was like hugging myself. And then I almost fell asleep. Oh. And I almost fell asleep on top of the patient.
Oh my God. That would have been so bad.
No, I swear. That's like a sliding door moment in my life. Like, I was thinking about that moment. I didn't fall asleep. I was like, oh my God, I'm falling asleep. Like, I think I caught myself. Like, I caught myself. I woke myself up. But if I crashed into that open chest.
Could you imagine?
I think about that all the time. Yeah, that's why I can never do OR. Props to you guys.
All right, next story. Hi, AB. So my story isn't a med mistake. More like a slip of the tongue. A horrible one. I was a new grad with less than a year of experience working in a neuro ICU at the time. I had admitted a trauma patient, a 32-year-old self-inflicted gunshot wound to the neck, attempted suicide, in front of his own mother nonetheless. He had been with us about a week. By this point, he had been trached because he was paralyzed from the neck down. Obviously, he wasn't going to be extubated. He was also ANO times 4, so rough situation all around. This was night 3 for me with him and his mom. His mom called to check on him. He hadn't been sleeping well, but we found out that if we left the TV playing for him, he could actually sleep. So she asked how he is, and I'm like, he's sleeping now. We left the TV on for him, and it was like a magic bullet. Foot in mouth. There was a silence on the other end of the line, and as soon as the words left my mouth, I was mortified. After a second, she finally spoke, and we acted like nothing happened. But yeah, I still think about it a lot, and every time I want to die. people say stuff like that all the time though without even meaning to. Like I've said things to patients and just been like, oh crap.
I don't get it. What is a magic bullet?
He had a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Like a magic fix.
Oh. I'm sorry. I was thinking of another bullet. Sorry.
Like the magic bullet?
Like the blender?
The blender? Yeah. I'm thinking about that too.
The silver bullet.
Oh, like the werewolf bullet?
Wait, what is a silver bullet?
Do you want me to show you? Wait, this is that door right there.
Woody was like, what's wrong with the silver bullet?
She's like, the TV worked great.
Oh, I got one of those. I like that one.
Oh yeah, that's bad.
Oh wow, I think you just go to the next story. That's all we need from that. So I was a fairly new nurse, fresh off orientation on a primarily medical ward. I had a patient who came in for AMS and was combative towards her family. Her daughter was at bedside. Patient complained of foot pain, and the daughter stated that they put iodine on her foot and it helps. I thought it sounded weird, but I didn't think much of it. Told the doc, and he ordered something for her pain, and we moved on. Later that day, I had to start a Foley catheter. Remembering what the daughter said about the iodine on the foot, I didn't think about checking for an iodine allergy when starting the Foley. I started the Foley, and shortly after, the patient's tongue started to swell. I called the rapid response, and the team came to the bedside. We gave two rounds of epi, and the patient was ultimately transferred to the step-down unit later that day. She came back to our unit, and even with the ultra-mental status, remembered who I was, claiming I tried to kill her.
Oh, no. I love
when patients do. Because it's crazy, they always remember.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't even know your name, how do you remember me? The daughter took most of the blame, stating that she didn't realize the mom had an allergy to iodine because they had been using it on her foot, which I still think to this day they were using something different and were just confused. I'll never forget that day. I'm an OR nurse now, so I start Foley's on the reg. I'd be checking those allergies 2 to 3 times before starting Foley's now. The whole experience was pretty traumatic for me.
I'm wondering what was put on the foot then.
Probably lidocaine.
Yeah, probably lidocaine.
But brown? I mean, iodine's brown.
You would think they would notice, right? I don't know. Maybe.
No, I think like just something in the name, lidocaine and iodine. I don't know why they're similar, but like the family members who aren't medical.
Yeah, Dane. But was iodine in her allergy list?
It sounds like she was, and she just like didn't check it because the mom. Okay. Yeah, that's tricky.
But thanks for the family member for being supportive.
Yeah, the scariest part about that is the family member could have been like, I never said that.
I always check for allergies. Contrast, there's a correlation with contrast dye and iodine, and I always double check with that if I have to put in a Foley.
Oh, yeah, that never occurred to me that iodine in the Foley. I mean, it occurred to me during this story, but like when actually doing it, I was like, oh, should I check an iodine allergy?
But now, thanks to this story.
Yeah.
No, in my old hospital, but since I started working in this hospital, I've always checked the iodine. Yeah.
There's so many safety checks, though, like once again with all the scanning and everything else. But
like if you've gone over the allergies in the morning, then later if you happen to have a Foley and you knew it was iodine, you'd like remember to look or like no.
I feel like that's a common one to miss, though. If I was going to slip up on an allergy like that, is you're putting in a Foley and you don't even think about it. You're just like cleansing. Okay, next story. Kind of funny now, but definitely was not funny at the time. I work in an acute care psych unit that's a locked unit when I was at the nurse's station after my shift finishing up charting following an incident when a patient who had been assigned to me all day approached me and asked me to help him out with something real quick. I looked up, smiled, and joked, I'm not even here, I'm just a figment of your imagination. As the words were coming out of my mouth, I just knew it was the wrong thing to say. The guy, who had been stable all day, immediately turned and ran, busting through the locked door and down the road into traffic. Security followed him and saw him trying to get into moving cars on the street. Had to get the police to bring him back.
Aww, my God, yeah.
The guy was probably starting to feel better, and then, I'm not even here, buddy.
That's another one of those times when you say the wrong thing on accident.
Why would someone say that, though?
You just do. You just say stupid stuff.
In mental health, I think you watch what you say, I guess. Because, like, I never worked mental health, so I probably would watch what you say sometimes, but
I would hope that I'd be able to be more careful, but then even just recording these podcasts, I think about all the things I accidentally say. I'm like, that's hard. All right. So when I was working as a tech in the ED, I've since graduated nursing school and I'm working there as an RN. I accidentally manufactured a STEMI. I had a chest pain patient come into one of my rooms and I obviously had to do an EKG really quickly. Plus I had a million other things to do, so I was rushing. I unintentionally flipped the left and right lead electrodes, which artificially created an ST elevation and depression in the corresponding leads that didn't actually exist. So my attending called a STEMI alert. One of my colleagues, who is also a tech, came over to assist since the cath lab setup is extensive at my hospital, and she noticed that they were flipped. We redid the EKG with the proper placement and the ST elevations were still there, but no longer showed the corresponding leads. So he wasn't actually having a STEMI, just had a chronic EKG abnormality. No real harm was done, and the patient wasn't adversely affected by it, but who knows if he had gotten all the meds and made it all the way to cath lab for a PCI for no reason.
They should have done a 12-lead EKG. That's what you do first for a chest pain, the 12-lead EKG, so you can see which leads there are in. That happens, like, when you... I've come in and haven't checked any of my lead placements from the night shift. Mm-hmm. And then I'll see that they're all like, oh, the green's over here. Like, have something to do, I guess, now, like new grad and all nurses, check your lead placements when you come into shift.
Yeah, like as part of like the start of your assessment.
I think she was attaching the 12 lead. I think she switched the 12 lead.
Yeah, that's what I got.
And that's why.
Oh.
That's where they're like, oh, shoot, we have to actually call this like as a STEMI alert or whatever. Then when they realize that, it was like, all right.
Oh, okay. I'm done. Yeah. If that happens, yeah, that's a hard one.
I wonder how many times things like that happen and
aren't caught.
Yeah.
Probably more than we think.
Probably.
What do you guys feel about like insurance?
Comes up a lot. I've never had.
I'm knocking on wood.
It's a weird thing to talk about. Someone's going to try to find me and.
Yeah. Like, he did insurance and he made a mistake.
No, I've also heard that if you have it, it makes people more likely to sue you, but I don't even know how that would work.
Like, how would they know?
No, yeah.
I had it. I've had it my whole nursing career. It's like $100 a year from NSO. I don't know if that's a company. I mean, that is the company, but it's a free ad.
You better reach out to them from that ad. We're going to have to beep that name out.
I have that insurance as well.
I just recently got it again. I think during nursing school, they require you to have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for like 10 years, I didn't have it, but I've got it recently. And then I feel so much protected. It's only $100 a year. That's why I feel.
All right.
And Evie,
I'm just out here in the wild.
Evie was like, or whenever we talked about this, he was like, Emily, no one gets that. You're just like the weird one to get that.
First of all, I didn't
it's
say
recorded.
That.
It is recorded, right?
Emily's like, Brandon, can you play back,
Brandon,
Evie?
Can you pull that back?
No, I mean, we pulled it.
I feel more comfortable.
We did a poll. I think it was more people didn't have it. I mean, I can pull it again. But
well, that's because the hospitals protect you. But then because you and I have spoken in the past about doing like mission trips, you have to have your own insurance to go on those mission trips.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
The other reality of it, too, is like, how protected are you really by the hospital's insurance?
Yeah, that's what I've seen or whatever, where it's like, yeah, they say they got you, but they're going to also protect the doctor mm-hmm. before they protect you.
Yeah, you could be a scapegoat for the hospital. And plus, NSO protects you for $1 million. So I was like, oh, $100 for $1 million protection.
Yeah, it just makes sense. I mean,
especially
protect
as
protect yourself, people.
Well, even
as, makes living risky.
Living on the wild side. No, but especially as a traveler, it's probably not a bad idea to have
100%
protection to have insurance.
100% as a traveler, because you know that hospital's not going to step in.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
well, that's a good question to bring up because we are talking about like mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know if anyone has had that insurance and then has came into a problem in the past where it did help them.
Oh, we could definitely look into that.
I mean, ever since I was starting nursing, it's always like the one threat everyone has is you're going to lose your license. You could lose your license for this.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, I think having insurance is a little helpful for that. Has anyone known anybody who's lost their license?
We had an episode where we had a lawyer come on here and talk about some stuff, but that would have been a good idea.
And he does malpractice.
Maybe we'll call him up for a part two of that. All right, next story. Honestly, I've probably made worse mistakes, but this is the one that comes to mind. And it was a time I accidentally fed a baby the wrong breast milk. I am a PICU nurse that floated to the NICU and had two babies that were really similar. I got their feeds mixed up. Luckily, you only missed out on a few calories. Whoops. So I know we've debated this on, well, not debated, but I know this came up on the story feed one time. And some nurses were like, that is a huge deal. And some people were like, no, it's not.
Yeah, it is a pretty big deal if you're in that world.
Yeah.
Is that formula?
No,
it's breast like milk. Actual breast. So it's like body fluid. Yeah. To, it needs to go to that particular infant.
Yeah.
Well, the reason people were debating it was because people buy other women's breast milk off like Facebook groups.
My girlfriend's sister sold her breast milk on OfferUp. And so that's really? That's what happens too. Yeah.
There's risks in that as well. But there are ways that you can buy it that has been like cleaned, and you donate to a blood bank. Breast milk bank.
Where are these breast banks at?
This is a very controversial topic. People do just sell it, like you said, off on OfferUp. But that does have like risks because it is not processed or cleaned in any way.
So what are the risks?
Okay, so I just looked it up. So what are the risks associated with milk sharing? Disease transmission, like human milk can be a source of infection such as bacteria or viruses like HIV.
Yeah, so, there's
significant risk right there.
Yeah, so be careful whose breast milk you're giving. Like, it's meant for your child.
It seems like a big deal.
Yeah, it should be.
No, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I know anything about it. Yeah, but I just remember the first time I heard about it. It was the first time I found out that it was like very controversial.
Huh.
With any bodily fluids, the first thing you think about is disease and infection transmission. So that's why I was kind of surprised when it came up on like the Instagram forum thing that there was a huge group of people who were like, basically like, shut up, it's not a big deal. Because I didn't even know that was a debate. And also like in the hospital setting, I'm assuming, I mean, you know who has, if someone had HIV or anything like that, you already know that when it comes to.
You can donate breast milk and then it will be cleaned.
Yeah, so it's a simple low-tech form of pasteurization and a splash heating. So it uses that method is used to kill bacteria and viruses like HIV. So
I see.
Yeah. Otherwise, like with hospitals, there are screenings, but now that you guys have brought that up, I see that that is a problem. At first, I was like, no, that shouldn't be too much of a problem. It's just breast milk. Mm-hmm. Other mothers will breastfeed children who need milk and the mothers can't produce it.
Yeah.
But now that you bring that up, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, there are massive Facebook groups.
It's a very controversial issue.
So yeah, if you're listening to this and you didn't know about that, there's that. Enjoy that deep dive.
What type of nurse are you, Emily?
I did cardiac step-down unit for 2 years and then travel nursing for 3 years with like random float pole stuff.
Oh,
so
nice.
Anything, everything besides ICU and labor and delivery.
Which unit did you work at again in Kaiser?
I was on M4, I think is what it was called. Like the onc.
Oh, 4 North?
4 North. Ortho? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, it was like oncology, med surg, and then I would go to like 7 West or 7, I don't remember the names, just the cardiac floors.
Yeah.
And then whatever place that they needed to send me.
No, we're floating to the floors now, and it's super tough, man. I do not feel comfortable. It's really like by 11 o'clock is when you actually sit down and like start charting.
But
ever since that whole time,
whole different workflow, man. Honestly, when you come into Kaiser as a traveler, you get so used to floating that you can go to a med surg floor and kind of like
that mentality.
Yeah. But the first time you haven't been there in a while, you're just like, how do I start? What do I do?
Dude, I used to be a traveler for Kaiser in San Diego.
Yeah.
And we floated every like
4 hours. Only,
like during swing shift, every 4 hours.
Yeah.
Now as a staff, I get freaking nervous floating. I'm so Kaiserized.
When you get anxious to float?
Yeah, I do.
Dude, I remember when I was working nights with you guys and there was one nurse that comes in at midnight. And so
They're happy to see you. Oh, Evie's here.
Oh my gosh.
Evie's here.
So Art and Evie, you guys used to work together?
Yeah, I've worked with him.
We used to work together,
yeah. Yeah, he's one of my favorite people to work with. Okay. Oh, I think this is our last story. And this one is actually related to one of our other podcast prompts. But it kind of fits in. It'll be a good closer. This is in response to the Call of Duty episode on your podcast. It caught my attention when y'all were talking about scene safety. So I had to throw in my personal experience out with that. For the first 3 years of my career, I worked in the Colorado Department of Corrections, and we had a severe staff assault on one of our units. The offender really did a number on the LT, multiple facial bones, laceration to the upper torso, swelling of the brain, of course, to the point that he kept fighting when staff arrived to try to help him. The facility is very large, and they have what's called a phase one, which means not serious, just need more officers present, and phase two, which is shit's getting real, get over here, response. The incident called for a phase two response, which happened to be called after they called for medical staff to respond. So as a nurse, knowing one of the officers was injured, we ran in, no questions asked. Gurney, man down, bag, board, C-collar, the works, all four of us were nurses. We were attempting to get the patient onto the gurney to get him out of the facility because as a severe assault patient, we didn't have the capacity to treat him there. We got him loaded, and just then, as we were slamming an 18-gauge angio into each arm, an officer ran into the unit and unloaded a hornet's nest, a grenade that breaks apart into little rubber pieces and hits everything and everyone for crowd control. He didn't pay attention that staff was already present. As nurses, we covered the patient and took the brunt of the force from all those rubber balls hitting us. Bruised up and in pain, we finished our fluid access and got the hell out of Dodge. Moral of the story, scene safety and awareness. I never run into an emergency in any prison anymore. All the bleeding eventually stopped. I've seen officers stab, offenders die in cells because the assailant refused to get cuffed and leave the scene, and I've given more Narcan than I can count. Scene safety is always key, even when you have top-notch security there.
Wow.
That is a tough lesson, but yeah, I mean, I'm not running into anywhere where I'm going to get stabbed or something, you know?
Yeah, no.
I think that's fair.
Yes, exactly. Oh my God, I can't even toss the, what is that, hornet's nest? Called it?
Yeah, I'd be pissed.
It doesn't tickle. It hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably from pretty close range too, like if they're like in a room or something.
Wow.
Yeah, that could get in your eyes.
I picture like bouncing off the walls.
Hey, Emily, what was that one other story?
You want to read it?
Because it's kind of along that same theme. This might fit on EB Eats a little bit more than Nurse Life RN, but I think it is worth the read. When I was a brand new nurse, about 23 years old, I had a preceptor that was a male. He was a lovable guy. Everyone in the unit thought he was funny and charming, including myself. I never much thought anything about our relationship other than the fact that we got along really well and joked a lot. I knew he was married, and I didn't ever think of him romantically. Something shifted throughout our relationship, and I started to develop some feelings for him, and I noticed that he would look at me differently. You know, giving me the eyes. I did really like him, but I knew he was married, and I always considered myself to be sort of a good girl, and that never really was an option for me. One night, when I was out with some friends, I got a text from him. I was never in contact with him outside of work up until then. He told me not to respond, but that he just wanted to tell me he had feelings for me, and he expressed that. The next day at work, we both showed up for class, and he asked me to coffee. He told me things had been on the rocks with his wife for a long time, and they were in the middle of a separation. It was there when he kissed me for the first time. Our physical and emotional affair continued for several months. Looking back, in hindsight, I can see his actions were extremely manipulative. But I never really knew how much of a liar he really was until it was all over. One example would be when he told me he was staying in a hotel because they were separated. I met him there, and I'm not proud of that. Looking back, I feel like a whore. At one point, he was texting her and said they were arguing over who gets furniture. When I tried to look over his shoulder, he freaked out and put his phone away. It's moments like that where I look back and know that it was all a lie and how naive I was. He went as far as to stop wearing his ring at work, inviting me over, telling me his wife was staying at the parents with the kids because of their separation. Looking back, I found out truths like the time he was staying at the hotel was really because he was taking a certification exam nearby, or his wife was really just out of town seeing family and not due to their non-existent separation. Things escalated and he was very emotional. He would tell me things like we were going to get married or whatever, and I believed every word. Things got very serious between us until one day I got an email from his wife, and it said he needed to end things and that she found out. He called me later that day from a payphone, yes, I'm old, and told me that he was sorry that she found out and he was going to have to go off the radar for a while. He started ignoring me at work and I was devastated. I dealt with so much grief after that situation happened because I really did think I loved them, but learned later that I was caught up in a really bad situation. I take full responsibilities for my action and the people I hurt, but I also recognize the crafty, manipulative behavior that I fell for. I've dealt with a lot of guilt and basically feel like a homewrecker, so much so that I went to counseling. I still have no idea if she ever really found out or he just got in too deep. At one point during counseling, I offered to apologize to her via letter, to which he frantically said no. It makes me think she never really knew in the first place. Several months after, there was a lot of rumors going around that he was in a relationship with another girl in our unit. All of this while he was still trying to manipulate me into getting back with him after he found out that I had a new boyfriend. At one point, he even tried to put me against the wall and kiss me. I have no doubt that he was a manipulator and a liar, but I didn't know to what extent. Many years after this happened, he was arrested and put in prison, where he is till this day, several years later. It was on the news, and he was basically arrested for running from the cops after breaking a protective order against his wife. The rumor circulated that he had been cheating on his wife with the neighbor and tried to break into their old house where the wife was staying. I've even heard rumors that he tried to inject her with a paralytic, which I'm not sure if it's true or not. I never considered him to be violent, but at this point, I'm convinced he's a narcissistic sociopath. To further show how wrapped around his fingers everyone was, several nurses, after he was put in prison, still talked about how they felt sorry for him and how he could never do something like that. I have no doubt in my mind that me and many other women were manipulated by him. I feel so lucky nothing worse came from the situation and I wasn't harmed.
Don't get involved with married men.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gonna happen. I mean, easier said than done, because I'm dating a married man. I'm just kidding. Eating your face.
I was like, what? Explain.
I'm kidding.
No, that happens in the unit, and it does spread like wildfire when that happens in the unit, and like rumors and gossip and all that. But
yeah,
it's very messy, and you're glad you're not, you got out of it. That's good.
I feel like it'd be hard to work on the unit with him.
It's exhausting. Like, he kept it from other coworkers of hers, and then
What's going on with that guy that he just has to do all that?
Sounds exhausting.
Dating someone on the same unit is always a bad idea, because if there's a breakup, then there's going to be so much drama that comes with it. I mean, some people can just work through that, but then other people will just dwell on the fact that, oh my God, he cheated on me, or we broke up, and I can't do anything else but think about him. So it's just always, it's always a bad idea to date someone on the same unit.
He was married and then juggling two fake relations, or like, that's just insane for the same unit. That's,
this guy would work 7 days a week, because that sounds exhausting for me.
He's got the work ethic.
I can't even do 3 days a week. I can't imagine doing that.
All right, guys, thanks again for listening to this episode of Nurse Speak. Special thanks to our guests, Art and Woody. Appreciate you guys coming on. We know it takes up a lot of time to get these recorded. And also, thank you guys for listening. We have one last episode in this season, and then we'll be back with a season two. In the meantime, if you have enjoyed this podcast and you would like to support this podcast, as always, you can always check out our website where we have merchandise.
Nursespeak.com.
And that is how this show is funded. That's why you don't hear any blue apron on here. So,
but next season, guys. Let's get those blue aprons going.
Someone call Blue Apron. But yeah,
I think that's my job. I should probably call them.
Yeah, Emily, why? Where's Blue Apron? All right. Thank you, guys. We love you guys. I always say we have the best audience and followers in the world. We appreciate you guys and the stories you guys send in, because obviously we would have no stories to read without you guys. You guys take care. See you soon. Or hear me soon.
Wait for my voice.
Yeah. All right. Bye, guys.